On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
So you get excited because they're excited, gets me excited, gets all of our fans excited, and our sponsors. So it's going to work out.
Bless you, boys! Unbelievable! I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
Step into the well-informed, ill-advised, and oddly entertaining world of Tall Can Sports.
Here we go!
Light the candle!
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to a post-Super Bowl edition of the Tall Can Sports Podcast. The New England Patriots are once again your Super Bowl champions. Julian Edelman is your Super Bowl MVP. Joining me on the phone is an insufferable douchebag Patriots fan, Matty Lang, who was unable to get a flight to Boston to be with his fellow douchebags, so instead is here with you and I to talk about tonight's interesting game. How's it going, man? It sounds like you're in a pretty good mood.
Wait for it, Matt. Wait for it. This is Tall Can Audio, right?
Yeah.
Wait for it. There it is.
You know what? There's a few different angles we can take here on this. The game itself was a bit of a story, but let's start with the champs themselves. The New England Patriots get it done again. I got to tell you, man, and I'm going to kind of let you take this and run with it. I'm kind of sick of the, I don't want to hear Tom Brady or Bill Belichick ever say again, no one believed we could do it, right? Like trying to paint themselves, even post-game, as the underdogs. I certainly didn't think runaway favorites, but
wait,
they...
No, I don't think that's true. And I've had this argument with so many people.
Okay.
That wasn't the case this year. Everybody said before the season... And everybody said during the season, and everybody said this going into the playoffs and including the Super Bowl finals, everybody said, well, the Patriots have a great record because they get to play the Bills and they get to play the Jets and they get to play the Dolphins.
Oh, that's true.
And it's not a real 13-3. It's not a great 12-4. But then all of a sudden, they're not supposed to be the underdogs. Everybody chirps them all year long. Because of this, and now we're not supposed to be underdogs. People got to choose a team. You know, you got to choose a side on this.
Okay,
and everybody chirped us all year long about
this. You were on the show 2 weeks ago, and we talked about how awesome both the AFC and the NFC championship games were. And we both sat there at the end of the game with 2 minutes left going, oh, fuck, there's 2 minutes left and it's Tom Brady. This is not over, right? Like, look, did they seem as overwhelmingly favored as they had in past years? No, of course not. But when we're talking about playoff games and we're talking about Super Bowls, I don't think anyone looks at the New England Patriots and goes, pushovers, they're done, right? Like, I just don't.
I don't think they were pushovers, but they had the worst odds out of every championship team to win, out of the four championship teams.
Compared to their own previous.
No. Compared to the Rams, compared to the New Orleans Saints,
okay,
and compared to the Kansas City Chiefs, they had the worst odds to win.
Okay.
They have a 41-year-old quarterback.
Yeah.
Everybody who says they aren't underdogs, it's a 41-year-old man. How many 41-year-old men do you know who can touch your toes? Okay. This is a 41-year-old man who just won his sixth Super Bowl. So I don't want to hear anybody come at me and say, oh, it's the Patriots, they're favored, all this shit. Because you know what? It's a 41-year-old man, and sports is a teller of time.
Yep.
But okay, this man keeps proving everybody wrong.
Okay.
Every time.
Let's not get too bogged down there, because I think, weirdly, quarterbacks, at least a certain type of quarterback, can play around this age still, right? We've seen Brett Favre stay competitive. We've seen Peyton Manning stay competitive on a stack of dimes neck.
At 41?
I don't know. How old was Peyton? He was late 30s.
That's a big difference. Late 30s and
39. Oh, fuck you. You are not.
You're definitely late 30s.
Yeah, well, I'm closer than you are. Yeah, no, I'm not, and I can't touch my toes. So, look, this game in and of itself, we'll kind of talk about, because the game is going to be a story.
I had to interrupt you for 1 second. Sure. Peyton Manning is 42 this year.
Yeah, and he's only 3 years removed. Okay, but he's only 3 years removed from winning the fucking thing.
That's a big 3 years, man. That's
39 to 41. Let's not get bogged down on 2 years. Like,
I gotta say, that's a big thing. I just want to say, okay, I'm not saying that that's like the biggest difference in age.
Henry Burris got it done. Damon Allen got it done. Old quarterbacks are fine, man. Doug Flutie. I don't know.
Wait, if you say Ricky Ray, I'm gonna hang up the phone.
Yeah, man, he's another one. All right. Look, what did you see? This was a dog of a football game, no matter which team you were cheering for. Why did the Patriots pull this out? Why were they the ones that were able at the end of the day to go, yeah, no, it's still close here at the end, but we're going to be the ones who finish this?
Quite simply, there was no panic. There was no panic on that team, and you could see it on the sidelines. For those of you who watched,
was there panic on your couch?
Oh, I was panicking.
Sure.
I was on my knees. Yeah. I was praying to three different gods.
Yeah, yeah.
I had Buddha, Jesus.
Sure.
And I was making up a third god.
Ganesh?
I don't even know.
Yeah, Ganesh, what the, I don't know.
Whoever I could find at that moment.
Yeah.
Listen, as a fan, you're going to stress out no matter what.
Of course.
But when you look at the – even after that interception on the first drive, Tom Brady didn't have a moment of panic on his face. He knew he made a bad throw. He knew that was a unfortunate tip that led to an interception. But he didn't let that change what they were doing as a team.
Jared Goff.
He never looked confident.
No, he didn't.
He never looked secure in the pocket. Gurley was non-existent. Anderson couldn't get through that defensive line. There was a couple deep throws by Goff, but at no moment, I don't think, did the Patriots, did Belichick on the sidelines look very concerned. McVay was sweating the entire game.
Yep, it's true.
Like it was his first Super Bowl.
Don't you?
And it was.
I felt like in the fourth quarter, 7 minutes left, 6 minutes left, the Rams had a nice march going, better than anything they had done through the whole game. They got all the way down to the point where they're pressing. They throw one to Cooks, I believe it was, who dropped it. And on the very next play, they try to go to the end zone again on a very similar play. And that, to me, obviously it got picked off and that was the game. But that was Belichick all the way, right? Like, okay, I see what you did there. Do it again. I dare you, right?
Yeah.
I dare you. And bang, they went for it again. He got rushed a little bit into the pass, but he made a poor choice, threw it back there, picked off, and that was it. In such a low-scoring game, they never had another shot at it, right? And even when they did, it just, what little confidence they had managed to build up through that march, and it did look like they had sort of found it a little bit, was just completely zapped at that point with about 5 minutes left in the game. It was over. It was done.
Let's not understate this. This entire 18-year Patriot run has generally been thought of as an offensive juggernaut, right? Yep. But Flowers, Hightower
was great today.
Were outstanding. My pick for MVP actually would have been Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah,
I thought he broke up a lot of passes. He had that big pick that you're talking about. He just shut down Cooks, who had been one of the top three receivers in the entire season, and he just shut him down play after play after play.
Well, interesting too, right? Because the Patriots lose Chung early, who's a big factor in their backfield.
Huge. Yeah, huge.
And that was, there was a play not too long after that where it looked again like maybe they could have got something going, a touchdown. And I can't remember who the guy was. Now you'll be able to correct me. Came from all the way across and broke it up in the end zone. And it just looked like any time LA might find a little something, it got snuffed out. Some of it was great coaching, great systems, great players. Some of it was a little bit of luck. But at any point that it looked like LA might get going, it was just snuffed out one way or another. And they just never looked like they were going to push New England at all.
I was telling a lot of people coming up to this week, and including at the Super Bowl party I was at tonight, this game was going to be won on the defensive end. Right? That's how it was going to be. It was going to be a grinding game. And again, when you think about the LA Rams, you think about the New England Patriots, everybody was predicting a 40 to 37 score, 35 to 27 score. Everybody would have thought that. And I was one of the only people that I know of that was saying, no, this is going to be a defensive battle because this is going to be won on, like I said, McCourty's, Flowers, Hightower.
McCourty. McCourty, that's the guy who came and broke up the play I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Donald and Ngondi Sue, right? Like it was gonna be those guys who made this series and made this this entire championship. And you could see it in the first series. What the Patriots did was they didn't actually block those two guys. They kept moving the ball to the outside.
Yeah.
Which is what I thought they would do, which is tire them out. Just tire those guys out all game because that whole defense was run around those two guys. Right? So, it was a chess match. It was very much a five-round championship series. And the Patriots, being there before, were like, you know what? We're just going to tire you out. We know this is a five-and-a-half-hour game.
Right.
We're just going to run you around and run you around. And that's exactly what ended up winning. That's the difference between teams who have been there now nine times and a team that's been there once.
I'm curious to hear you talk so much about defense. Obviously, this was a low-scoring game. I guess I was impressed with New England's defense, but I think for three quarters anyway, when I watched that game, I saw two offenses not getting it done more than I saw two defenses shutting it down. Obviously, one is part of the other, right? Like, I don't think either defense played bad, obviously, when a game's that low scoring. But it just looked to me like neither offense, at least near the beginning, was totally in sync, more than these defenses were just stifling things right down. Obviously, well, you see that a little bit differently.
I thought I saw it a little bit differently, and I think a very telling statistic, and somebody on Twitter will correct me on this one, I'm sure, but if not Rob, but in the first half, I think Goff had about 52 yards of passing.
Yeah, it was in the 50s, yeah.
Right, it was pretty low, and I don't think anybody would be very surprised who had watched that
game. I don't
game.
Even think that was under passing. Pressure. I think that was total yards. I think they had 57 total yards. Right. Yeah.
I think the Patriots had about 190, maybe 170 at that point.
Yeah.
A lot of that was negated by that one interception, in that first series. Listen, that tells me that it was that bend and don't break defense, right? Within that first half, you had that interception in enemy territory. You had the missed field goal as well. That's 10 points.
Sure. Yeah.
That's an easy 10 points. That's at least an easy 6 points, if nothing else, right? So, and towards the end of the game, you have the missed field goal from the Rams with 5 seconds left, which was pretty much like, why even bother?
Well, yeah. And they're talking about it on the broadcast, right? Which do you do first, right? Do you try and get the field goal and then go for the Hail Mary?
I'm actually against that. I think statistically speaking, the one thing you want to do is try to get that touchdown because it's a lot easier to kick that 55-yard
yard.
How drunk am I right now?
We've both had a couple. You're having celebratory drinks. I'm having morning, this sucks drinks. So,
right, but that's what I mean. Like, kick that field goal, even if you hit it, you still need to recover the ball, get it back, and take that Hail Mary shot.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I can see both sides of it. You need both of these things to happen. So in which order you choose to do it, they managed to get to midfield. One is irrelevant without the other. I don't think I have a big problem with the way they went about going for it. I just Well, let's start here then, or let me take us over here. Julian Edelman, MVP, obviously had a pretty solid game. I didn't really think anyone on offense had a great game. Brady managed the ball pretty well, but, you know, you look at this was the first ever Super Bowl that went three quarters without a touchdown. You can't think of anyone on defense that might have been an MVP, right? Like, we've mentioned a couple of names here. People were laughing on Twitter saying you could make either of the punters MVP.
I mean, that being said, that was some of the best punting that I've ever seen in a football game.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't looked up the stats. I haven't looked up the numbers. So,
but no one wants to come out of a Super Bowl talking about the punters.
But listen, there were so many punts inside that 10-yard line.
I know.
It was absolutely like, nope, neither of the punters made one mistake.
Oh, I know.
And in fact, the guy from St. Louis, Hacker.
Come on, LA, man. St. Louis is.
How he got the ball to roll or bounce forward every single time.
Yeah.
And he punted like 12 times today.
For sure.
And every time he punted and the ball rolled forward, Edelman was getting so frustrated. You know, he had no chance to return any of those punts. I mean, there's a skill to that for sure.
Yeah. As for the MVP, you're good with Edelman. You don't want to give it to Gilmore. You don't want
to. No, to me, it was Gilmore. At the end of the game, even in the fourth quarter, I was saying it's got to be Gilmore after he had that pick.
The pick, especially.
The last time I remember going to defensive player, and God, I'm going back about 15 years now, was Tampa against Oakland. And
wow.
I can't remember who it went to, the quarterback, but he had at least two interceptions and he ran one back for a TD.
Right.
I don't know if that has to be the gold standard for a defensive player, but I thought Gilmore broke up enough passes that, to me as a football fan, I'm like, okay, this guy deserves it.
Right, and part of it is like, how often does a defensive player even have a shot at being MVP, right? And when the offenses on both sides were so stagnant, just give it to the guy, right? Like,
and even going back a couple years when Butler made that pick at the end of the game. Absolutely win and steal a Super Bowl victory, number four at that point. Like, you got to go like, oh, he's getting it. He still didn't get it.
And Crabtree had at least one big, you know, like there's been opportunities and they haven't done it, right? So this, to me, when it was so low scoring, why don't we move into the game a little bit? And we can kind of bounce around here a little bit. But you and I exchanged a couple of texts in the second half, and one of your texts said, I hate this game. And I'm drunk or something like that.
Yeah.
At that point, is that because it is a dog shit football game or because you're stressed out with how close it still is?
No, for me, that was just a stress response, right?
Right. You can understand, like, obviously for a Patriots fan, this whole thing spins around and you go, who the fuck cares what the game looked like? We're the champs. And that's legit. You can see how to anyone like me who doesn't have a dog in the race, who just loves the Super Bowl every year. This sucked, right? This was a bad football game.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I mean, this is the problem with the Super Bowl, right? It's the everyman show.
Yeah.
So everybody loves fireworks. Everybody loves a high scoring game. Because offense is easy to appreciate, right? This goes for hockey. And this is part of the reason that hockey has trouble to get a stronghold in the U.S., right? When you get to playoffs, it's not a high scoring offensive game.
Okay, but this was 3-0 forever, and we had a World Cup final this summer that finished 4-2 France over Croatia, I think, right? Like, it was higher scoring than this Super Bowl for a long time.
I think that just comes to what people appreciate as a common fan, right? We can all appreciate points on the board.
Yeah.
And that was always the knock against soccer for so many years, right? That it's 1-0, 2-1. Nobody can appreciate that. And you really got to be able to appreciate the stuff that's happening in the trenches in football, just like you do hockey, right? Like, sure. You got to appreciate the neutral zone fights. You got to appreciate the fights in the corner. But you have to understand, like, cycling the puck. And in football, truly, and this is the problem, football has a lot of shitty teams, unfortunately, even though it's supposed to be, like, the most parity in any sport available.
Yeah.
You still have a lot of shitty teams that don't know how to coach and draft bad players. And God, the CFL is an even worse example.
Hey, stop. I know you're drunk. I'm not going to let you start teeing off on the CFL just because you're feeling good about your
Argos under the bus on this one, because listen, that team dropped off, and there's no reason for a championship team to drop off like that.
Well, their quarterback like broke his neck and his head. It's a pretty good reason.
I mean, that's pretty bad.
It's a good reason, Matt. It's a fair reason.
Well, we're talking about reasons.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, all right.
That's a good reason. But your entire team shouldn't depend on one player in any sport.
It's true enough.
Right? Unless it's Connor McDavid. But you should have a backup for that.
But I get what you're saying, right? That I don't watch a lot of NFL. I tune in for the playoffs. I tune in for the Super Bowl, and maybe I'm a little more casual. And that's fair. But growing up in hockey, my favorite players were goalies. In baseball, my favorite players are pitchers. I appreciate good defense, right? Like, I'm good with that. I just don't really feel like that's what I saw tonight. I feel like I saw sputtering offense more than I saw great defense. And I know I sort of said that a little while ago. This game sucked. Like, it was boring. There was so many incomplete passes. It was just punching it back and forth. I don't know, man. Like, this was not... I'm willing to concede that I'm not the biggest NFL fan in the world, but I can get on board with a low-scoring, hard-hitting defensive struggle. I just didn't really feel like that's what I got tonight, at least not through the first half.
I'm surprised you say that, because I really thought the Patriots are like the closest thing to a CFL team in the NFL. They're very much a three-down team. And they're going to go and they're going to try to make it happen within those first two downs.
They are more aggressive, for sure.
And I think they have some great third down plays. And I never bet on my favorite teams, regardless of any sport.
Yeah.
But one of the prop bets that I love. Well, exactly, right? And one of my favorite bets was Pats making it was third downs, 5.5, over under. And I thought for sure they were going to go over that. And I haven't checked the stats again on that. But I know at one point they had made about 3 or 4. And that was probably around the third quarter. So I assume they hit that, but I'm not really sure. But again, because they're a very CFL-oriented offense trying to make that happen, that leads to a lot of short third downs.
Yeah,
I thought the defense on both sides was pretty good. A lot of the missed passes were tips. A lot of them were like just the quarterback
being pressured,
people.
For sure. Like, Goff never had much time.
And there was a lot of pressure. I don't know, man. I watch a lot of NFL. I watch a lot of football, period.
Yeah.
I thought that was it was an exciting game. And games don't have to have points to be exciting, right? And in fact, the fact that it was actually 3-3 for forever
made it 3-3 made it seem like a fucking gunslinging shootout at some point. Like,
well, God. Actually, when it went to 3-3, I was actually pretty excited. I was FaceTiming my friends who were Patriot fans, and we were all like, thank God they only got 3 points there. Because you just felt like if they put that 7 up, that puts a weird stress on the game. When you go 3-3, it's a different offense.
Yeah.
When it's 3-7, you have to get that touchdown, right? And that's what happened to them at the end of the game. When it was 13-3, like, you got to get that point.
Start opening it up, yeah. And we did see it, right? When the pressure started to mount. You know, we referred to it a little earlier in the show. In the fourth quarter, the Rams did put together a pretty good drive most of the length of the field, and they got picked off at the end zone. But there is a certain amount of, okay, fuck, we got to go now, right? And it starts to put the pressure on you a bit. And I think when it stayed 3-0 for that long and it stayed that close, both teams were pretty, like, even LA goes, it's only fucking 3-0, right? Like, one touchdown or one field goal. Like, we're not in trouble here at 3-0. It might as well still be tied. And there was no pressure it's the Super Bowl, there's pressure. But you don't feel like, holy fuck, we got to do this right this second, right? Like, it was a weird game, man. Like,
it was not the like, game. It wasn't the game any of us were expecting.
No.
That's 100%. I mean, and that's what makes Edelman winning the MVP to kind of go back around to it so interesting. Because he had 120 out of his 141 yards or 142 yards in the first half.
Yeah.
And I very much expected them to go to Edelman down the middle all game long.
Well, especially when it's not working, right? Like, when neither offense is going, go to the guy that's working, right? Like, go to the one that is getting it done, and he was. So you'd expect them to stay on him a little more, but it just didn't really continue into the second half.
Yeah, I mean, that was a little bit odd. I mean, the fourth quarter was a lot of just Sony Michel just getting run down the middle.
Sure.
Again, you outside of not scoring a touchdown, he very well could have been the MVP because sure. he really sealed that fourth quarter for
yeah.
them.
Yeah, that's true.
And the Rams had no answer for him at all. And I don't know how you don't, because any other Patriot victory. And so actually, after Gilmore got that interception, my buddy said, well, aren't you excited? They just sealed the win. I said, no, because I remember when Butler got the interception around the same point on the end zone. And the first thing Patriots did was run it three times and got stuffed three times.
Right.
So to me, you're like, and it's football. If you know a guy's going to run, you pretty much just stuff the middle.
Right.
But by that point, the Rams had no answer for that offensive line. And Sonny Michel just ran right through them. So, I mean, in retrospect, do you give it to an offensive lineman? Maybe. Can you give it to the entire offensive line as a communal MVP? Because maybe this is the first time you should have, right?
Yeah.
Last 20 years, I cannot remember an offensive line just dominating the line of play over two guys who are first team all-stars.
Well, and I was just going to say, right, that was sort of the book coming into this, was LA's front seven was supposed to be a huge problem, and they just weren't, right? Like, I think on both sides, New England dominated the line, right? Like, that was, like, they were getting all kinds, on the defensive side, they were getting all kinds of pressure on Goff, and on the offensive side, they were giving Brady all the time he needed, right? So all that talk coming in that LA's front seven might be the whole story here, or at least a big part of it, there was no sign of that at all.
No, and I think this comes down to coaching on this one, right? I think Belichick knew exactly what he was doing coming into this game. And when you give a coach like Belichick this much time to prepare,
yeah,
he had, and for a team in LA that had been gunslingers, and LA had very much, and let me digress here for a second.
Sure.
LA had very much the look of the Patriots when they went 16-0, okay, where they were great for that first 10 weeks of the season and started to peter out as the season went along as teams started to catch up to what they were doing.
Yeah.
Where the Patriots were the other way. No, nobody, not a, and I listen to a lot of U.S. radio for football because we don't have a lot of good NFL talk here in Canada. Quite frankly.
Except on this show.
Except on this show, because, you know, you guys got me on every once in a while.
It's true, man.
Where's the laser sound on that one?
Yeah.
We need the pew pews.
Yeah, this isn't Tim and Sid, man.
Here's the thing. The Patriots were not great. And like I said before, this was a talk that came around the league the whole time because it was always, well, they're just beating up on the Bills. Well, they're just beating up on the Dolphins. Who cares? Who cares? Who cares? This is a team that started to pick up steam after week 14 when they actually lost to the Dolphins on a last-minute touchdown pass.
Yeah.
And throughout the playoffs, they just got stronger. There's a little bit to that, right? That team started to come together. And sometimes you just got to hit your stride.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? I can tell you, from being – you know, around a lot of different sports for as long as I have. And you know, there's a certain, when you have a veteran team that you're playing against, right? When you're the young kids, I think for a long time, as this game went on, the Rams were okay with how it was going, right? You're like, okay, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and the Patriots and Gronk and whatever's happening there, they haven't blown us out. They haven't come storming out and taken it from us. It's 3-0, whatever. And so you feel good, right? And you keep going and you keep going. And then it starts to swing back the other way. As you get down to the short strokes at the end, now it being that tight shifts back towards Belichick and Brady because those guys aren't panicking. And it is still tight. And they've been there 100 times in playoff games, in Super Bowls. And so I think early on, it being that tight didn't bug the Rams at all. But as it got closer and closer and closer to the end, that little gap starts to seem bigger and bigger. And, you know, those guys aren't going to make a mistake. What if I make the mistake? And it reminds me a little of...
And they did. And yeah, they did.
And it reminds me a little, and I hate being the guy that always pulls it back to hockey, but I only do it this time because it stands out to me so much. And I want to ask you if you see it this way. In 2009, the Blackhawks were the cool kids, right? They're coming up. They got Taves and Kane. They've got Keith and Seabrook, and like they're ready to do this. and they get to the conference finals, and the Red Wings go, yeah, go fuck yourself, right? We're still the big guys on this side of the league. And they kick them back out, and then they sign Marian Hossa, and they come back, and they win 2010 as kind of the young kids, and they get it done. And then
I stop you for a second?
Yeah.
When you were setting that up, I was sure you were going to say the Blackhawks are the team that are going to the finals, and the Vancouver Canucks think they're going to win the Stanley Cup final.
Well,
that is all I could think of, and I was getting ready for that the whole time.
Okay. Yeah, no, but it's like, so they come up, they learn their lesson in 2009. So I guess people would probably assume that in this case, my example is that the Red Wings are Brady and the Patriots, and Goff and the Rams are the Blackhawks. But that's not even really where I'm going. In 2010, the Hawks then jump up and get it done. In 2013, they get it done again. In 2014-15, when they win that 2015 Cup against Tampa, they didn't deserve that Cup. They weren't as good, but they were now a veteran team. They've done this a bunch of times. They're experienced, and they know how to jump on teams at the right moment. And when I watched the Patriots tonight, that's sort of what I saw. That I don't know that the Patriots were the better team on paper going into this. The Rams are the young up-and-coming cool kids, which you even mentioned coming out of the NFC and AFC playoff games, that, you know, it's the next chapter versus the old guard. The new chapter wasn't ready. The old guard stood there and said, you have to take this from me. Again, we can go all the way back to the first time the Islanders played the Oilers, right, in the Cup final, all the way back in the 80s, the old man Islanders were coming in to face this buzzsaw young team, Messier and Gretzky and all these guys, and they just shut it down. And they just beat these kids. And I remember, and who knows if it's true or not, but the old story is that those young Oilers, when they were leaving, they didn't want to walk by the Islanders' room because they didn't want to see this huge party. And there wasn't one. It was guys icing their knees and, you know, like had been to war, and you look at it and go, that's what it takes to win. And that's sort of what I saw tonight. I don't know that the Patriots were the way better team, but they were the way more experienced team. They were the way calmer team. And they looked at it and went, you have to come beat us. And the Rams just didn't. They might win a Super Bowl next year or in 3 years or whatever. They're a good young team, but they weren't even if they were the better team on paper tonight, they weren't the better team in execution. And the Patriots just took it from them.
Like the great Ric Flair said, to be the man, you gotta beat the man.
Woo! It was an interesting man. It was a shit football game, but at some point that came back around to favor the veterans, right? Favor the calm guys.
Again, I go back to what I was, you know, and again, we didn't do a pre-pod, but I messaged you on Twitter about the couple bets that I had sent a friend of mine to take. And they were all take the under, except for Tom Brady pass attempts, because I thought they were going to do a lot more screen passes.
Right.
The Patriots were, and again, I go back to, were the Patriots underdogs for this game? Yes, they were, even though they were favored by, when that line opened, when we talked 2 weeks ago,
yeah,
they were favored by, I think, 1 point. And as we were talking, it got moved to about a point and a half.
Right.
It was 2 points. 2.5 today, got up to 3. I felt that had no value on the line. And I thought that had a lot to do with the fact that just a lot of people will always bet on the Patriots because for 18 years, the Patriots have been fan favorites.
You're just trying to get a little last minute action, right?
And I felt like that was what it was going to be. I had a feeling the line was going to move up to, I mean, I watch a lot of Vegas lines. That's how I make a lot of my bets. I knew it was going to go up, up, up the whole time, so I didn't bet on that money line. But to me, they weren't. And again, I watch the Patriots all season long. I watch a lot of football. I watch 3-4 games a week. They have not been a fantastic team because the team is getting older.
Yeah.
You got Tom Brady, who, again, is a senior citizen as far as sports are concerned, in a sport where that's literally driven by 25-year-olds. He's 41 years old right now. And we can talk about how quarterback you can be a little bit older, but we're talking about unicorns out there. We're talking about Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, and maybe Philip Rivers, right? Who have been doing this for that long, and Aaron Rodgers as well. But you know, guys who've been doing this for over 15 years, this is also a very weird time, right? Because for the last 15 years, we've been cheering for the same quarterbacks. And we can include Roethlisberger in this as well.
Sure.
Outside of those guys, the only one who's come up, can you name him? To actually be a star, outside of those four or five guys that I named, can you name the one guy who's truly become a star? And don't count Patrick Mahomes because he's done it for a year.
Yeah, okay.
Although I think he's going to be the next big guy. Can you name the other guy who's even come close and actually won a Super Bowl?
It's funny, in the time that you've mentioned those guys that have been around forever, Tony Romo's come and gone. He's now in the fucking booth, right?
He started after
those guys and now is finished before them. You're right. I probably don't have the name you're looking for, right? In terms of guys that have reached that level. It is a weird time, and we're going to turn the page here pretty soon on a bunch of these guys.
And it's coming to that point, and I don't know any other sport that's had that many of those guys at the same time, right? We've seen Michael Jordan play into his twilight. We've seen Kobe Bryant win in his twilight. We've seen LeBron James now still in his twilight. Roger Federer.
Well, I can't let you move on, man. What's the name you were looking for? What's the name?
Russell Wilson.
Oh, Russell Wilson. That's a great call. Yeah,
Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Not only did he win a Super Bowl, he also stole a rapper's girlfriend at the same time. So, I mean, he gets bonus points for that.
That's true. Like I said, we can kind of bounce around here a little bit, but I was engaged in a couple of interesting debates online today leading up to the game. One stemmed from an interesting comment on Twitter where someone posted, if you're the guy planning on bringing vegetables to the Super Bowl party, why don't you do your host a favor and pre-wrap that in the compost bag that it's going to end up in the fucking morning? Or better yet, stay the fuck home. I saw a couple of people debating the best Super Bowl snacks. What was going on at your party? Were you guys into the food or mostly drinking?
This was the best Super Bowl spread I'd ever been to.
Really?
We had chili. We had pulled pork.
Chili's big in the Super Bowl thing. Pulled pork is always awesome.
Right? There was two different types of hot sauce. We had a 7-layer dip.
Yeah.
We had a homemade charcuterie board. We had taquitos.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, neither do I. Neither do I. But I ate them anyways.
All right.
This was actually one of the better Super Bowl parties I've ever been to as far as food. Chicken wings, always good.
Wings
good
for
call.
Sure. Yeah.
I was pretty impressed. The host went all out. I couldn't have been happier except the fact that the host was wearing his Buffalo Bills jersey, which made no sense to me.
What are you doing?
So every time Gilmore made a play, I was like, there's your Buffalo Bills.
Oh, my God, man. Self-respect.
Have some self-respect. He said he's been a Buffalo Bills fan from the age of six.
Then you know better than to wear one of their jerseys during a Super Bowl.
What I had to tell him was, when I was the age of six, that was their fourth loss in a row. And that's exactly why I don't cheer for the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, man. Yeah. You know what? Around here, obviously, as you know, we got the keg going. So we've got Vimy's Stout. Vimy Brewing Company is a great brewery here in the Ottawa area. We've got their stout on tap right now. Other than that, we were into just pizza and chicken wings. Kept her pretty simple tonight. But yeah, the pulled pork would have been good. Last year, had a couple people over for the Super Bowl, I think. Maybe it was a year before. It doesn't matter. And did slow-cooked a nice pulled pork all day. And that kind of really, to me, that's the best fucking Super Bowl food. I know a lot of people get into chili, and I was surprised on all the top 10 Super, you know, every year around this time of year, you see ESPN or Deadspin or whatever all putting out their top 10 Super Bowl foods. I always see the 7-layer dip, and I'm like, all right, I guess, like, if that's what you're into, but I'm looking for something a little more substantial, right? I'm not looking for the dip. Like, hit me with the pulled pork, hit me with the chicken wings, something like that. Yeah.
I mean, the best thing about the pulled pork was we put the pulled pork on the chili.
Oh, okay.
And that actually killed the game. Again, like I said,
just sitting there bloated and, yeah.
And it was in like Frank Red Hot today. We had the Grace habanero.
Okay.
Like they went, even though they're white people, they went straight immigrant cell and got the Grace hot sauce.
Okay.
Fantastic. That was a big move. Shout out to Mark and Megan on that one. That was fantastic.
So I saw a great poll on Twitter, and I'll hit you with how the results went, but I want to ask you first. And it said, on which day do you believe you consume the most calories? And it was Thanksgiving, Christmas, Super Bowl. They said 4th of July. We'll turn it into 1st of July here. Obviously, they also do Thanksgiving a little bigger than we do here. But what do you think in terms of food and booze and whatever? What's your biggest of those four?
Oh, for me personally, definitely Christmas.
It's got to be Christmas, right? For
gotta
me too.
It's got to be Christmas, man. Yeah. I dominate like at least two solid dinners, a good breakfast, way too many mimosas at breakfast.
Yeah.
I hit the gin hard in the evening. That's not even a question.
And especially if you factor in like kind of the week around it, right? Like the Super Bowl, you're not really, unless you're in Atlanta this week, you're not getting drunk for the Super Bowl for days leading up to it.
Exactly.
It's that day. Whereas Christmas, you could add a couple of days of this group of friends on one night and then the family the next night. And then, you know, we had a couple straight years in my house where my sister and I were starting off the day with hot chocolate and Bailey's. And then my dad and I'd move into beer, and it's still only like 9:30 in the morning. And now you've got the big breakfast and you're drinking all day and the big dinner. And it's Christmas, man. I love Thanksgiving, but it's different here than it is in the U.S. Super Bowl is just drinking and eating, but it's not quite like Christmas. Yeah. And Canada Day, I don't know. It's just another
Day. Yeah, I think Canada Day versus U.S. Independence is a little bit different. Yeah. They do it big. Canada Day for us tends to be more beers and cottage.
Yeah. Over the course of a long weekend where they bang, they hit it hard on the 4th for the full day, right? Like,
and I was going to say that it's probably the same thing for the difference in the Thanksgiving, right? Like we do Thanksgiving Sunday, maybe Monday.
Yeah.
They do it on a Thursday, which means they got Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
<true. laughs>
They're just nailing the turkey over and over. They got all the pecan pie you could even fucking smash.
That's true, man.
Right? Like, we don't even do it even close to the same. Grey Cup versus Super Bowl is not even a conversation, quite frankly.
I got to be honest with you. First of all, you're totally right. But it used to be. Like, we used to do the Grey Cup. We used to treat it with a lot more respect up here. Both when you and I were younger. Like, we're a very similar age. Our parents or that generation treated the Grey Cup way more closely to the Super Bowl than we do now. And, and there's all kinds of reasons for that. But like even I can remember my dad all kinds of times telling me about their old family business. They would like rent out the old Oshawa golf course and have all their employees, all the workers and stuff in for the Grey Cup party. Right. And they'd have it catered and it'd be all kinds of beers and food and whatever going on. And it's just kind of fallen off. And the Grey Cup and the CFL, they got their own issues, right? But we used to treat it with a lot more regard. But you're right, now it's no contest in terms of... but it is similar in the fact that Canadians do watch the Grey Cup more than any other football game. But it just doesn't even compare in magnitude, obviously, to the Super Bowl.
No, I think to your dad, you know, to your dad's story, and to when we were growing up in the 90s, I mean, the skill level was still debatable.
Sure. Yeah.
The CFL still has some guys who you knew would be way better and way better than a lot of guys in the NFL.
Yeah.
And now the money just changed that.
That's for right? sure. For sure.
The money changed that. I think the last three players we had were that
Flutie
team in like 96, 95,
Flutie and Drummond and Pringle and Pinball and that whole
Vanderjet.
Crew. Yeah. Like for sure.
And once they were gone, that was kind of the end of the CFL. As far as star player names go. And that's kind of the last real CFL parties I remember happening.
And we were too young to properly enjoy them.
Yeah. Like, I mean, obviously we went down to Ottawa or I went down to Ottawa to meet you guys for the Super Bowl party.
Grey Cup party.
And that was amazing 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But that was within Ottawa.
Yeah. You make it.
I don't think that happens outside of
the host
teams that are maybe happening anymore, right?
Yeah, and the host city will always and make it a city. Big deal, yeah.
For me, the Super Bowl is me just grabbing my tall boy
right,
and just shaking in sheer fear for most of the game.
I, Okay, so why don't we come back around to the game? Because on that note, I'm fascinated. Last year, when the Leafs played the Bruins in Game 7, I watched that game by myself, and I did it by choice. I had two or three different people. Do you want to come over? Do you want to go out? No, I don't. I wanted to sit there, and I was essentially, like, at my feet was a puddle of sweat and rum and tears, right? Like, in my own living room. I didn't want any part of being, like, there's a certain amount of when your team's in it, it's actually less fun because you're stressed and you're whatever.
100%.
Yeah. Whereas if you're just watching the Super Bowl and it's two random teams, you're like, yeah, let's fucking watch a great football game and a spectacle and drink a lot. And, you know, there's kind of a, so I wonder tonight, and I'm sure you'll remember this game more fondly than most football fans because of the type of game that it was, but do you enjoy being at a party when your team's playing, or would you rather, I'm not saying do you want to be alone, but, you know, is there a certain party that's just like, okay, I'm not in the mood to joke right now. I'm, you know, everybody just kind of leave me alone. Like, what's your, you've been through this a lot, man. You've done six of these since 2002.
Thank God I have.
Yeah.
This is how many teams I support that get this far into
it.
Yeah,
so, fuck.
Unfortunately, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Out of the six championships and nine Super Bowls,
yeah,
this was probably my third favorite. Only because at the age of 41, again, we don't know how long Tom's going to be there.
Right.
Belichick's way older.
65 or 67, yeah, or something.
We don't know how long he's going to be there. These guys are symbiotic. So at that point, as a Patriot fan, you just start to go, we appreciate every moment that we have with these guys at this point. And this wasn't the fact 3 years ago either.
Right.
At this point, you are just thankful that there's one more. And I think that's what makes this Super Bowl special. And the fact that they were, again, as a defensive battle, which is actually what this team started out as 18 years ago, defensive specialist.
Greatest show on turf, going up against Kurt Warner, the Arena Football League star, and Marshall Faulk, and
That was one of my first online bets I ever made, and one of my favorite betting wins of all time.
That's 2002, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was actually too young to bet. I actually lied online about my age, but I had a credit card.
I don't think that's cool. I don't think people lie on the internet, man. That's not cool.
Yeah. Nobody lies on the internet. No. That is not a thing that happened.
No.
So let me say this. I mean, I've been at party. The last time I hosted a party was the win when it was 28-3 against Atlanta.
So that's 2 years ago.
Yeah. 2 years ago, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I was hosting a party, and I had brought in the pizza and the spread, and a couple friends had brought some stuff in, and I had to sit there during the entire halftime and just get yelled at the entire time.
Yes.
And then we came back slowly and slowly and slowly until that overtime. This party was better. And I had told the host earlier, I was like, just be prepared. If you're going to have us over, I'm going to stand by myself. I'm not going to sit.
Right.
I'm going to yell at the TV. Just accept it. And as those drives came in the fourth quarter, I was doing exactly what I said.
Yeah.
And at one point he looked at me and said, as long as we don't get a noise complaint. And I said, no promises.
No promises, man. Yeah.
No promises. The time when Butler made that interception, man, you know I'm not the tallest guy. I'm 5'7" and a half. I literally hit the ceiling of my friend's condo that time. I've got hops. And that was a fairly pleasant party, but I got to say, man, I told everybody this time, like, don't bother me during
right.
If it gets serious, just leave me alone. Just let me do my thing. This one wasn't too bad. Everybody's pretty respectful. Like I said, the one against Atlanta a couple years ago, that was bad. That was bad. I was hearing every chirp you could ever imagine. Again, it made it better because we came back and won. So I won't actually go back and sabotage your lives.
Yeah, I think your experience is a little different than most people because you cheer for a team that is so universally disliked, right? Like, even in my instances, like I'm thinking of even Blue Jay playoff games in 15 and 16 where everybody I'm with is cheering for the Blue Jays. I still want to be just shut up, right? Don't talk to me, right? Like there's sort of a, whereas like, yeah, you would be going through hell when the Pats are getting blown out because everyone hates the Pats except you, right? Like, so you have a horse in the race and everybody else is just like, yeah, fuck your horse.
And the worst thing is nobody else has a horse.
Right.
They're just chirping me because they can actually chirp.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part about being a Pats fan, at least in Canada, where nobody cares about football until the playoffs.
Well, yeah, fair enough.
Like, for the most part, most people do not care about the NFL until it comes to...
Yeah, I don't know about that, because I still... And you're closer to it than I am. But as a hardcore CFL guy, I look at it almost the opposite. Like, way more people in Canada follow the NFL than the CFL. And that makes me mad, right? Like... Hey, we had a great round of playoffs this year, and none of you fuckers watched it, and now all of a sudden, you're heavily invested in the Kansas City Chiefs? Get lost, right? Like, fuck
hey,
you.
I hate Kansas City Chiefs fans as much as you do. That is a non-starter with me.
So, as we sort of start to wind this down, when you look at this one, you know, you've kind of indicated that it's a little sweeter because maybe... As Patriots fans, you guys weren't feeling the love this year or the respect that maybe you felt you'd earned. You don't know how many years are left with Brady and Belichick. How does this one sort of rank? You know, there's been six of them. I don't need you to put them all in order 1 to 6. But where does this one kind of fit in the pantheon of this generation of Patriot? You know, I don't know what a dynasty looks like in modern sport anymore because with salary caps and everything being the way it is, we don't really see teams who win 4 out of 5 championships anymore or 4 in a row or whatever. But we did just see a team win 3 out of 5 and 6 over 18 years. It's not nothing. Where does this one sort of fit in with this group? I guess really Brady and Belichick are the only guys who've been around for all of them, right? Like,
so, I mean, I've already said this, the third to my heart, but I think it's probably the fourth. What I really think about it, I mean, you got the Butler one.
Yeah,
that's probably number one or two. I think that was the one I was most excited about because it was just that one play.
And it was so dramatic,
and it was dramatic.
The
and
finish
I was,
of it was.
I want. I almost. I was actually sitting there watching the game, saying, "I want them to score. Just let them walk in."
Yeah,
because I wanted the ball back.
You want the time,
right? You want the exactly. You want the time back. You want to let Tom Brady do his thing.
Yeah.
That's probably number one as far as one play excitement goes for me. Number two is obviously coming back from against Atlanta.
Yeah.
The unspeakable comeback. Number three is definitely the first win. And I'd argue number four would be probably beating Philadelphia. Because Philadelphia just sucks shit. So fuck you, Philly.
How long ago was that? Was that still McNabb and Andy Reid and that crew?
That's right. That was when McNabb threw up in the huddle.
Yes, yes.
Trying to win
yes.
the game because he just couldn't handle the pressure. He's a dick.
Okay.
I mean, we love the Nurse family here.
We
love the nurses.
Yeah.
You know, Team Canada, all that shit.
Sure.
Hate Donovan McNabb. Okay. Fuck him. So maybe this is number five. I don't know. It's 4 or 5. Again, like I said, this fits into a special place because they're getting older. We don't know how long this is going to happen. The interesting thing, what you just said, right? Like, what does a dynasty look like?
Yeah.
They've actually been more successful as Brady's gotten older. There was about an 8-year period there where they didn't make the Super Bowl.
I was looking at that just before we started the show because they won in like 02, and then like I'm going to be off here a little.
It was 02, 04, 03. 506.
Something like
if
that.
If I'm not mistaken.
And then, like, nothing till 2015. And then, bang, 15, 17, 19 wins. And you're like, well, where you been for the 6 or 7? But they were always there. Like, they were being taken down in the conference final or... Like,
there was two losses against the New York Jets, unfortunately.
They never sucked, but they sort of took a step back. And again, you know, it sort of reminds you of Pittsburgh Penguins, who make it to the Cup Final in 08, lose to Detroit, make it again in 09, beat Detroit, and then they're gone until 2016. And it's sort of like you're kind of running on this young enthusiasm, and then that runs out, and you have to figure out how to do it more methodically, right? How to do it as more of a veteran. You know, that youthful energy is gone. You kind of circle back around. In this case, let's call, you know, Crosby Brady, right? And you're going to lead this group a little differently, right? And you're a little smarter, and you come back and you win two more in a row, which the Penguins did in 16 and 17. And obviously you hear 3 out of 5 for the Patriots, right? You kind of mature as an organization. So as we kind of wrap this up, I'm going to give the final word to you. As we look at this NFL season, as we look at this version of the New England Patriots, I think we saw some interesting stuff as the season went along. I obviously didn't watch it with a fine-tooth comb quite like you did. It looked like scoring was way up in the championship game. Obviously, it was way down. That's going to happen now and then. I'm sure it's not the taste that the NFL marketing machine would like to leave you with. What is your sort of takeaway from this season, from this Super Bowl, from this playoffs, and, you know, from this Patriots team? You don't have to take all of those, but sort of wrapping it all up, what are you going to remember about this season?
I still think this is the year that the changing the guard happens. And part of the reason that this Super Bowl win for me as a Patriots fan was so amazing is because I can't guarantee, I don't know if we're ever going to get back there again. Not with Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs there. I mean, Andy Reid's always, when you got Andy Reid as your coach,
yeah,
you can't count losing out. And that's a great thing if you're a Patriots fan or anybody in the South Division. But God, it just gets harder and harder every year, right? Because every year somebody's coming to get you.
Yeah.
And every year the Patriots are the team that everybody circles on their calendar.
Get up for, yeah.
And you know that. And again, this is 18 years in a row that the Patriots have been doing this. As much as people want to hate greatness, and don't forget, people hated Jordan.
Of course. Right?
People hated Jordan. People hated Gretzky.
As we wind this down, final word to you. Good Super Bowl, bad Super Bowl, you know, final thoughts on this one as we shut her down.
Not a great Super Bowl for people who are just tuning in, obviously. There was a lot of points on the board.
Entertainment value was low.
I wouldn't say, again, as a football fan, entertainment value was still high. There was a lot of great defensive plays. Again, a lot of tip passes, a lot of huge coverage that intercepted or deferred passes,
right,
even if they weren't intercepted, are exciting for football fans. Obviously, today is not the day the NFL wants that.
Right.
Especially after the championship series where both games were just absolute offensive juggernauts heading into each other with, you know, overtime games. You hope this leads to people appreciating football. Again, I was gripping my beer the whole time. I was praying to Buddha. I was praying to Ganesh. I was praying to Jesus himself. I don't even know. I said more prayers today than I have said in the last 10 years. Today was a great day to be a football fan, and any true football fan who says they hated this game is lying to you, because this was a great, fun game to watch. Right up until the last couple minutes where, you know, it was kind of over and done with the Rams trying to make that last minute field goal, which it wasn't going to hit. This had everything. It had interceptions. It had touchdowns. It had storylines. It had missed field goals. This was fantastic. Anybody who says they were cheering for the Rams, they're just haters of greatness, quite frankly. Listen, there's no – the LA Rams were away for 20 years, and they came back, and all of a sudden there's Rams fans again? I don't want to hear that shit, okay? Patriot fans who have been here since the beginning, since Drew Bledsoe, stay with me. We still got a couple years left. Let's feel this out. But if this was our sixth and our final ring, you know what? We can't hate that. We got Tom Brady out there. We got Belichick out there like Thanos. We got six rings. They could just turn people into dust at this point based on the Marvel movies. This was fantastic, man. We may never see a dynasty like this. And like we talked about at the beginning, what does a dynasty look like? Because this is actually two dynasties in a row. This is two dynasties within 18 years, which may never happen again. Since expansion, this is such you're more likely to get hit by lightning than to witness this again. So anybody who loves sports should just love and appreciate this.
I'd much rather be hit by lightning than see this again.
Hey, you know what's less than getting hit by lightning? A Leaf championship. So
yeah.
bear with me on this one.
I know you had to throw that at me, but I know when you wake up in the morning, you won't feel good about it and you'll wish you hadn't said it.
No, you know what? This is why I relish this, because I was born and bred into Leafs, and this is how Leaf fans happen, right? We are born into this. We are born and bled into blue and white, and as much as I've tried to give up them, we can't.
No.
We can't divorce the Leafs, and this is the only team that I've ever followed that's ever won a goddamn thing. So let me enjoy this goddamn championship.
Absolutely, you are entitled to that.
We've won six Super Bowls. Every one of us fans had something to do with this. Every one of us who begged and prayed and just hoped that Gostkowski second field goal attempt went through, who bared with us all. This is all for us. Man, this is the best championship we'll ever experience, because he's 41. We may never get another one again. And that's how we got to remember this.
Fair enough, man. What's also fair is that I lied, and I'm going to have the final word. And that is that the New England Patriots are full value for this victory. But the football game that we were all forced to watch tonight was dog shit. And...
oh, come on.
Either team had a chance to win it, but...
but only one did.
Only one did, and they're full value for it, but the game sucked. This Super Bowl sucked. The halftime show sucked. This was a forgettable year. This falls on the bottom of the chain of New England Patriot victories.
But you know what it does? You know what it is? It's still a victory.
Yes, it is. And I'm not trying to take that away from anybody,
man.
They all count. But from a spectator point of view, this sucked. Hopefully you did not feel that way about this edition of the Tall Can Sports Podcast. You can give us a follow on Twitter at Tall Can Audio, Facebook.com/Tall Can Audio. Sometimes we're on Instagram. That's a Tall Can Audio. We're kind of hit and miss over there. You can follow us at any of those places. Of course, you can support the show at Patreon.com/Tall Can Audio. And you can hit up Maddie's physio blog on Instagram at Matt Does Physio. We'll link all of those things in the show notes and, of course, on our own social media feeds. Maddie Lang, it's been a late night. I know you've been happy to celebrate. Appreciate you doing the show as always, my friend.
Just like Tom Brady says, let's go.
Yeah, fuck him. We are going to end this show. That's Tall Can Sports on the Tall Can Audio Podcast Network. For Maddie, I'm Matt, and we'll catch you all on the next episode.
Listening. You can get more TCA at TallCanAudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.